A little bit of a snowstorm has you delayed in Minnesota, so that's good. Allows us to do this in time and on schedule. I guess, first of all, I want to discuss Connor McDavid's coming back. Obviously, Oiler fans are beside themselves, giddy with his return. You've come back from injuries before, and for skilled guys, especially as a rookie, what's going to be the toughest thing for McDavid to encounter jumping into the season now that it's 50 games old?
I would say that, you know, I think tonight – and the first couple of games will be okay, but then there's always usually a drop-off coming back from an injury just because you're so high right now that you're so excited. And then once you get into a few games, then the normal wear and tear schedule will kind of get to you a little bit. And also, you know, he's still a young guy. You know, we obviously saw signs that what he can show us for the future, but he's still a young guy in this league. And obviously, I'm sure he's very eager just to get some games in. And, you know, he's still adjusting to the transition of the league, and the guys are now in game 50. So most of the veterans are running on autopilot. So, you know, he's got a little bit of an uphill climb there.
Now, we always hear the term chemistry, and some guys work together better than others. You and Brett Hall had great chemistry. Obviously, you and Cam Neely had very good chemistry. What other guys, like, was there a certain type of player that you had chemistry with? And if so, what was needed for you and that guy to gel?
Well, just because, you know what, first of all, I was a center, and being a center, my father taught me my whole life, you have to distribute the puck. So I was always looking for ways to get my wingers the puck in. And then being a passer, as you get older, to have a guy who obviously likes to shoot it, and most wingers shoot it more than pass it, and then you just find that guy that rises through the ranks that has a knack for it. And then as you get older, you know what, the chemistry develops where you look at like a Ryan Getzlaf and Corey Perry. You know, one guy clearly likes to shoot it more than the other, and the other guy likes to pass it. And they're both highly intelligent guys, and they know how to do their job, and they know what the other guy's thinking. And before you know it, there's a chemistry.
Now, as a coach, Todd McClellan, you know, Jordan Eberle's the Oilers' most skilled right winger. I don't think there's any argument about that. And him and McDavid have yet to be healthy in the same game. Tonight will be the first time they play together. Can you tell right away if guys have good chemistry as a coach, or do you talk to the players about it, or is it going to take a few games for the coach or even the players to know how well they jive with one another?
Probably a little bit of everything. I mean, you'll probably see some signs, and obviously they have the skills. And you never know. They might be so excited to try and make it work that they kind of over-try, and it kind of clanks a couple times. But I don't foresee any problem. You know what? Connor's just got to get his game and get some games under his belt. And once they get into a rhythm, I think they'll have a great chemistry.
Quickly, give me your thoughts on John Scott in the All-Star game.
You know what? It turned out to be a happy ending, so I'm glad about that. I think the league will obviously you know, investigate the voting type thing because of what happened. And, you know, at first for myself, you know, the All-Star games were very important. It was like a huge honor to be kind of picked to be with the guys that you kind of like think are the best players in the league. So, you know, you kind of don't want to make a mockery of it, but in saying that, I think the way it ended was good. And I'm obviously happy for him.
Adam Oates joins us. Adam, I want to talk about coaching philosophies, especially in the offensive zone. You've been an NHL head coach, you know, you're a guy who excels at the power play. And when coaches work on a power play, a lot of times they can have more success. There's so much focus on defensive zone coverage. Do you think the NHL will ever get to a place where coaches actually coach offensive zone plays rather than focus so much on the defense and just allow players to ad lib?
Yes, I do. I really do. I think it's going to get to that point. I think it's starting to. It's kind of why I formed this company a little bit. I think we're turning it a little bit like football, where everything is being so scrutinized, you know, obviously with the analytics as well. So we're going to start having, kind of like the football has the offensive coordinators, you know, because one goal, one point is just, you know, the dollars are just huge nowadays. And I think you're going to start seeing more guys think about how to score goals, because when you really think about it, it's a lot easier to defend than it is to produce.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, you know, that puck has to get penetrated into the five-man defense and has to get by the goalie. So it is a lot easier to defend than score goals. And so you're going to have to figure out ways to do it.
What do you think will be one of the new things that allows offense to crawl back up. We're never going to get to, you know, offense of the 80s again, and that's fine. The goalies are better. But, you know, we're in a time now where we've seen the second fewest goals per game on average in the last 60 years. So what is it about, you know, offensive strategy that will have to change moving forward?
You know what? I think coaching kids when they're younger, I think coaches need to learn a little bit about it because, you know, you just said a huge stat about 60 years, yet we have a guy named Patrick Kane who has no problem getting points, no problem getting goals. That team has no problem. So they have good players on that team. Every team has good players. So something's missing. There's a disconnect somewhere. And Patrick Kane, when you look at him, he's not the biggest, not the fastest, not the strongest, doesn't have the best shot, yet the guy knows how to produce points. Jaromir Jagr is 43 years old. He's obviously not, he can't skate like he used to, but in the right situation, that man knows how to produce goals. So I think when you talked about philosophy previously, I think you're right. Like, some of these guys have to learn what it's like as coaches and instructors growing up, how to teach these kids where to go, how to produce a point. And you know what? I think you'll see some of that in our league.
Adam Oates joins us. Adam, one of the big conversation pieces, people are like, oh, we should go to Olympic size ice. I watched the Olympics and I was like, please, no. I think that would be terrible for the game. Now, you played in an era, well, not in an era, but in a rink that was smaller in Boston, and you had your best years. Is that just a coincidence? Was it because you were playing Neely, or is there something to the smaller rink?
You know, I'm agreeing with you. I don't think the bigger rink as offense at all. I think it actually takes away from it. You look at soccer. Come on, the field's huge. There's 11 guys. You can't touch with your hands. They can barely even get shots. You know what? You look at the last Olympics. You know, we win 2-1. It's not like we're winning 6-5 over there. Because at the end of the day, what we just talked about, you can find guys who can skate. So the bigger the ice surface, it's just more skating. But at the end of the day, you still have to penetrate. I've always been in favor of smaller rinks, partly because I was a bad skater. But if you think about all the like half-wall guys in the league, you want them to have the puck the most. So why wouldn't you want a smaller ice surface so they get more touches? I mean, if I'm coaching Claude Giroux, I want that guy to have the smallest rink possible because he gets the puck more, and he's got the hands and brain. You know, if anything, his weakness is his skating, so why wouldn't you want him to touch it? The problem with that is, you know what? We are in a contact game, and the smaller rinks might lead to more injuries. But in terms of offense, and you want your better players to have as many touches as possible.
Now, when you played in Boston, and it wasn't that much smaller, but did you notice a difference for you in the offensive zone there compared to other rinks in the league?
Just all three zones. I mean, it is smaller. It was a lot smaller. Chicago Stadium was smaller. Buffalo was smaller. Toronto was smaller. The old Montreal Forum was smaller. I mean, you're talking about, 10 more touches a game minimum. You know, I mean, that's a huge number when you think about it. And guys are right on top of you. You know, there's no real room to skate. And you know what? The checking is so tight. You look at the Sedins right now, who are very good at producing points. You know, their weakness is up and down the ice. But once in the zone, are they ever far from each other?
No.
They're right beside each other, touching the puck and making those little two-man games. And, you know, that's a lost art in our league.
Adam Oates joins us. And that's a great point, Adam, because a lot of people listening might think, well, hey, if it's a smaller rink, it just has less time for guys to react. But in reality, if the guys play the two-man game or a triangle in close proximity, you don't have to be a better skater. You just have to have better reflexes and better hands so you move the puck accurately and quicker, correct?
Yep. You know what? One of the things I work on with every player that I ever teach is stop saucing the puck. You pass the puck flat. You have to learn how to pass it flat because someone can shoot a flat puck. So the closer you get to a player, the more the holes are big for you to pass the puck. If I'm standing 10 feet away from you, I have to sauce it because you're seeing it. You've got 10 feet of reaction time. So I got to put it like over your stick and make it land flat. The closer I get to you, the more the holes get bigger. That's kind of back to our power play and wash we talked about last week. Those guys don't move. They let the puck move, but the quarterback, Nick Backstrom, knows how to make that first pass and create the momentum. And he sees the holes. He's all the good players in the league pass the puck flat, and they see those holes.
Adam Oates joins us, our weekly chat on Tuesdays. Adam, we are now 4 weeks away, just yesterday, to the NHL trade deadline. And it becomes a stressful time, I'm sure, for players, but maybe an exciting time for coaches. And is there more conversation with the coach and the GM in this month about exactly, because you can bring in a guy to your team where you think he's going to be a good fit, but ultimately isn't for whatever reason. So how much does the coach have to be involved, or how much does the GM have to do his work on ensuring that the guy will be a good fit in the room?
You know what? Every situation is different. Some general managers and coaches, I'm the GM, you're the coach, you coach the players I give you, and then there's other situations where it's a real give-and-take communication between the two. I've been a part of both, but obviously, even as a coach, if you're not involved, the GM and the scouts are obviously talking about a lot, and it is an exciting time, especially if you think you're a team that one little maybe addition could really help you.
I'm looking right now at the standings, and the Washington Capitals are plus 54 in goal differential, which is like 25 better than any other team in the league. They clearly look like they are the best team. Now, there's a few teams like in the West right now, five teams in a playoff spot weren't there last season. LA, San Jose, Arizona, all in the Pacific, then Colorado and Dallas. And, you know, you look at it, As the season goes along, Adam, it's harder to score goals. Defenses crack down even more. And I know we started the conversation talking about find ways to create offense. Does the power play become even that much more important down the stretch? Did you find, even as a player or as a coach, that, you know what, the power plays late in the season meant more than they did earlier in the year?
You know what, I would say yes and no. Obviously, the answer is, you know, the immediate answer is yes. But nowadays, you find, even at the beginning of the year, I'm sure we were talking that, you know, you get behind the eight ball 10 games into the season, and it's hard to catch up. But in saying that, you know what? Yeah, there's more stress on everything. And if you're a team that can generate offense through the power play, I think it's kind of a cure-all, because you got, you know, you probably have 10 players getting points every night if the power play's good. So you got those guys are not in slumps. They're still feeling good about their game. And especially when the games get more stressful, you want the good players playing well.
You brought up an interesting point about the games becoming more stressful. When you're on a non-playoff team, is it easier to play down the stretch?
Well, you have mixed emotions, right? Because, you know, you want to be playing in the playoffs. You're not. It's a tough feeling. It's a tough environment to go to the rink. And, of course, you're trying to be professional about it. And you're being encouraged to be professional about it for you, for the fans, for the organization. And it's hard. It is hard.
Yeah, no, I always argued that it was harder. People always said, oh, there's nothing, you know, there's no pressure on them, so they play easier. I always felt that if your team's out of it mentally, it might be harder to get up for the game.
Yeah, and you know what? There are games once every blue moon where that mental issue does show itself. You see a team really flat, and you're like, well, they're out of the playoffs. And that does happen, no question. But then they get yelled at after the game and try and wake back up for the next game. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you're supposed to be a pro, right?
One last one for you, Adam. I know you're on your way to Winnipeg. You're going to meet up with one of your clients, Mark Scheifele. What have you been working on with Scheifele this year? What's been the biggest parts of his game, you know, in the skills development factor that you've been working on or changing?
You know what? For very minor. For Mark, we talked a little bit about the lie of his stick. And he's a young guy still learning the league and learning the game, and just a little bit of information on kind of where to stand in the offensive zone, a little bit of power play, a little bit of collecting pucks and where to put them to give yourself the best chance where to go. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where day in and day out, when you communicate often enough, little things just slip through that he picks up. And I think Mark is a very good player, and he's going to become a great player in this league.